Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you.
Kia ora and good morning, everyone. Welcome to this edition of Red Alert Radio and Planet FM 104.6. My name is Maya Lubeck and a Member of Parliament for the Labour Party based in Rodney. I'm also your host today on this slot on Red Alert Radio. Today I'll be talking with my guests on the phone about all things Dutch. It's a topic close to my heart as I was born in Holland and immigrated to New Zealand about 30 years ago in 1989. I'm really excited to be doing these interviews today as I increasingly mix and mingle in the Dutch communities, and there are really quite a lot of things that I never really knew about a large part of our New Zealand population. So very quickly, just a bit of shared history between New Zealand and the Netherlands. The very first recorded contact between the two peoples in New Zealand was when Abel Tasman and his crew anchored ship in Golden Bay all the way back in 1642. The local inhabitants they encountered were Maori of Ngāti Tumatakokori, and the two wakas paddled out to inspect the strange vessels. The Maori then challenged the intruders with their ritual sounds, and when the Dutch responded with trumpets and fired a cannon as greeting, this provoked an angry reaction. Now, the conflict that happened at the time, and which actually led to the death of four of the sailors, shows what can occur when different cultures come together without an understanding of each other's values, beliefs, and practices, and that is a message that is still very true today. So from small numbers of Dutch immigrants arriving in the 1950s, the Dutch population in New Zealand has now approximately 120,000 residents of Dutch ancestry. It's one of the many nationalities in New Zealand to make up our nation. And one of those residents with the Dutch ancestry I'm talking to today. So I've got Harry Duinhoff on the phone. Hello, Harry.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very good.
Very good.
Very
good. Hey, look, I did a bit of a Google search on you, and it's no, nothing bad, but it's very clear that you've been in politics in one form or another pretty much most of your life. You know, I saw, you know, obviously I knew that you were a member of parliament and cabinet minister, mayor of New Plymouth, but you're also being elected on the New Plymouth District Council, board member on Taranaki District's Health Board. It's a very impressive list of achievements you've got there. You're also awarded a Companion of the Queen's Service Order for your services as a member of parliament. And I'd like to give a little bit of understanding to our members about you know, your upbringing and you know, how exactly your connection is to Holland. I know you were born in New Zealand, but your father was Dutch. So tell us a little bit about you, Harry.
Well, how I came to be here, I guess. My father was immediately after the Second World War. Of course, the Netherlands was a lot of unemployment and a lot of I suppose, unsettled people. And he was second son of a southern Dutch farming family and wound up being conscripted into the Dutch army. Mm-hmm. So in 1947 he was posted to Indonesia in those days, and which was, of course, the Dutch Indies at that time, and came at the end of the peacekeeping effort when independence came. He and his good friend decided, we're not going back home, we don't want to be farmers. Mm. So they decided they would toss a coin and come to Australia or New Zealand, and they got New Zealand, and that's how they came to be here. So the two of them were on the first plane to fly from Jakarta to Auckland.
So you're talking 50s, are you, or late 40s? 50, wow.
Yeah, and the trip apparently was a four-day trip because they camped at airfields along the way overnight.
That's amazing. What a
on a DC-3. So, our waka was Dakota DC-3. came to New Zealand. The very first job he was given was in Taranaki on a farm.
Yeah.
After all that. So he wound up doing a few years in farming.
Yeah.
And in the course of that, met my mother, who was of Irish descent. And, I came along in 1955, so
yeah,
there you are.
Yeah, well, and so look, your mum and dad got together, and from what I understand from talking to you, it was a fairly religious environment you grew up in, and
yes,
it gave you certain values, I suppose, as a result of your upbringing.
Yes, we had a very strong Catholic household and very firm views on what was right and wrong and what was just and unjust. And, yeah, I grew up with that, and I guess in a way that's what eventually led me into politics, because with a group of other young people we decided to do something for the planet, and we set up a trade aid shop, a couple in our area, and as a result of that, there came a day when I had a discussion with the local Member of Parliament over an issue which we felt was quite unjust. Mm-hmm. And his comment to me was, if you think you can do better, why don't you have a go?
Wow, that's
so
amazing.
So the next election I did.
So, and you were a teacher at the time?
Yes, I was a technical teacher. I did my time originally as an electrician, and then taught technical subjects at the Taranaki Polytechnic, and then moved across into high school teaching. Yeah. And before going into Parliament, I was Head of Engineering at New Plymouth Boys High School.
Wow. And so why the Labor Party?
I think because of the fundamental justice issues, I saw that the Labor Party was on the side of people rather than corporations and big business and so on. At the time, it seemed to me that for people, particularly those who were less fortunate, to have any sort of chance of a fair go at life, they needed a party which was going to stand for the issues that they needed someone to stand for. And so that's why I became involved in the Labor Party.
Yeah, good for you. And that has been more than 40 years now since you joined, isn't it?
Yes. It's gone fast, I've got to say.
Yeah. So when you say it's gone fast, what about your time in Parliament? What did you find most, you know, when you're saying, someone said to you, you know, if you think you can think good things, believing what is, you know, what is just and unjust, what do you feel you were able to contribute in your roles?
I think the thing that you look back on with the most satisfaction, and I still get today, long after the event, I still get calls from people, but I get people come up to me as well regularly and thank me for stuff that happened years ago, often which I can't even remember.
Wow, yeah.
Just people that I'd helped in some way or another through the office. I had wonderful staff, by the way. You couldn't do this without the quality of staff that parliamentarians have. I had fabulous electorate assistants and so on who did a wonderful job for me, but the ability to actually help people through their problems, not necessarily solve their problems for them, but to actually help them find a way forward, is probably the biggest thing I took away from Parliament as a satisfaction with the job that I did. And sure, I was only a junior minister, but as a minister you do get a lot of satisfaction of the things that you change and make better for New Zealand. But my career was, timing's everything in politics, and I always seem to have the knack of not being in the right place at the right time. I came in 1987, which was, of course, halfway through the Longy government, and that was a very, very difficult time in politics. There was such huge reform forced on this country by the financial situation New Zealand was in 1984, that by 1987 the Labor Party was basically internally in a state of severe disarray, to say the least, over policy direction, because the party itself had one view and senior members of the government had a different view as to what was appropriate and what was needed. And it took us a long, long time to get over that. So in 1990, I came in 1987, halfway through, and I was completely unexpected that we would win, that the Labor campaign would win New Plymouth, but we did. And had a wonderful group of people on the ground working. They were just superb. We assembled a team, we went out and went for it. Yeah. And in 1990, sadly, I was deposed again. But on election, as we came up to the election in 1990, I carefully wrote down many of the things that were being said by my opponent and his team, and said to the public, you will come to know that these are not true, that these things are lies. Yeah. And in 1993, was able to, with the same notebook, go out and say, remember when this guy said this? Oh. Well, this is what happened.
Excellent. So I'm getting some free advice here, I feel, for my 2020 election, so much appreciated.
It was a very robust campaign, but... Yeah. When lies are being told, you should expose them, in my view.
No, and, well, that's fair enough. And I think, you know, probably with your Dutch background...
We don't go for that much.
Yeah. There's not much beating around the bushes there. I mean, you see is what you get. So straight shooters, that's I guess, the sort of feedback that we get. Do you think those are your character traits that have helped you or hindered
maybe,
you?
Maybe helped or maybe hindered. There's certainly times when I've said things that people have said to me, oh, you shouldn't have said that. That didn't endear you to anybody, but if it was true, it was true.
Yeah, I guess we don't always go into politics to make friends, perhaps.
No. I regarded it simply as going in to do a job. Yeah. And my job was to be as straightforward and honest with the people that I was able to, and to actually do a job for the people of this country, and that's what you do.
Yeah, wonderful. Look, and you talked about your strong teams on the ground when you were campaigning. I believe you had a very special person helping you out door knocking back in the days.
Yes, in the 90s, I had a right through from the beginning. I had a wonderful woman working for me, and her niece came and helped in the 1990s, delivering pamphlets and knocking on doors and those sorts of things. And that niece was Jacinda Ardern.
Oh, well, there you go.
And Jacinda came and worked as part of the campaign team in, I think it was 1999, I think, maybe 96 first. And then later asked if she could come into my office as an intern.
Wow.
We were in opposition at the time, I think, and we were in government, but I wasn't a minister at that stage. And she came in as an intern and then went off to do her master's degree in Utah. While she was working for me as an intern for several weeks, I suppose a month or so, we managed to get her a short placement in Phil Goff's office as well, and she really enjoyed both of those placements. And then some few years later, I had by that time become Associate Minister of Energy and Minister for Transport Safety. And my energy private secretary's wife became pregnant, and they decided to, with very short notice, they decided to go back to the UK, where they had come from. And so I had this vacancy, and Jacinda applied for it.
Wonderful.
And when she applied, I knew straight away that she was going to come and work for me, but I sent her over to the Ministry of Economic Development at the time, talked to the chief of the Crown Minerals Division, who was, of course, my head of department, effectively. And he rang me a short time later and said, Harry, are you going to employ her? I said, why? And he said, well, if you don't, we will. I said, no, I've already decided to. I just wanted to make sure that she was okay from your point of view. And, of course, she was. She was absolutely excellent.
Yeah.
And was a great private secretary. But more than that, she also was a wonderful person who had a real sense of what's right and wrong and what's fair and unfair for people. And that stuck with me as to a mark of her character. And, wonderful. Of course, she's gone on to strength.
And it hasn't changed. And she and our Prime Minister is still very much exactly like that, hard-working.
Absolutely.
And having a good sense
I was with her just last week when we had the major forum in Taranaki over where to from here for the future, for energy and so on.
Yeah.
And she's Exactly the same person. It's wonderful.
Isn't it lovely? Hey, Harry, look, that was a really neat way to finishing off what has already been 15 minutes. I can't believe how fast that went. I had so many more questions, but perhaps we pick it up some other time.
We can do it another time.
Have another chat. Look, I've been talking to Harry Downhofer, who's been a really stronghold for the Dutch community in several roles that he's held, from parliament to district councillor, mayor. He is a very interesting person to talk to, as I discovered in my 15 minutes, which have flown past. So, Harry, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to have a chat to Arjen van der Boon soon, so I'll have to say goodbye, but perhaps tot ziens en volgende keer.
Tot volgende keer, yeah.
Okay.
Say hi to Arjen for me.
All
the best to you, Maya. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. Bye.
Bye.
And now I'm talking to Arjen. Arjen, are you there?
Yes, I'm there, Maria. Thank
excellent.
You.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Look, we first met in Foxton at the opening of Te Awahau Nieuwestroom.
That's right.
And that was the New Zealand National Dutch Museum, Oranjehof Dutch Connection Centre, which was a really great day and the result of a long hard work by you, but we'll come back to that. I just wanted to mention that you were awarded a Dutch Royal Decoration last year in recognition of your work for the Dutch community.
Absolutely,
particular as co-chair of the Dutch Connection Museum Trust. And I'll just explain to my listeners that this particular decoration is a knight in the Order of Oranje Nassau, which is the Dutch equivalent to a knighthood. So it's hugely impressive that your efforts were recognized in that way. Now, Arjen, the last I knew, you were senior lecturer at the Menneke Institute of Technology, but now you're in a new role and in a new place. Can you just give us a little bit of background to what you're doing at the moment?
I've been asked to become marketing manager for Te Awahau Nieuwestroom, which houses a Maori museum, a Dutch museum, a Foxton community hub, and a library. So, it's a really exciting time right now. I've been here about a month. As we speak, I'm looking out over a river and a colder landschap, a Dutch landscape with Frisian black and white cows. And in the distance, there's the Tasman Sea, where Tasman sailed around some 400 years ago trying to get through Cook Strait. So it's great to be here and try to get more people to come here and engage with us.
Absolutely, because it is a really special place, the Te Awahau Nieuwestroom. It's interactive. It combines all of the different cultures. When you're talking the Maori culture, the Kiwi culture, the Dutch culture, it's all in one. And I thought it was a really impressive place to walk through and learn, look and learn.
Yeah. And you said interactive. It's very much hands-on. You can go into the windmill and see the flour getting ground on the huge millstones. And then when there's a decent wind blowing, you can go into Whareminaki, the Maori carving and weaving shed, and maybe even try your hand at twirling the poi. And it's there for old and young. We get a lot of pensioners who come here for a lovely day out, but we also get families with children who can run around, play Dutch games, schule, look at the digital screens, find out stuff. So it's educational, but it's fun and entertainment and hands-on at the same time.
Yeah, fantastic. And look, you're doing a great job, because I've heard from so many different Dutch groups and Dutch communities, that they make that their day out or their yearly outing. So it's really, really good to hear that people are enjoying that.
That's great to hear. Yeah. It was not easy getting a Kiwi company to create a Dutch exhibition and explain things like what is gezellig, and that's a typical Dutch thing, and how do you create a gezellige woonkamer, and they created a very nice living room, but it was very teen and clean and tidy. But as you know, gezellig means a bit messy and brown, and so it took them a few times to be able to do it. But we've created a Dutch space, I think, a colourful space with Dutch humour, and so we got there in the end. It all worked.
I know that is the culmination of a very long time. You spent, from what I believe, nearly or more than 12 years establishing this museum. Why exactly was it so important to you?
Good question. This is a story I hear from many Dutch people who come to New Zealand. You come here and you're an immigrant and you want to become a Kiwi and, well, you've been in the Netherlands for most of your life and you don't really want to have much to do with those other Dutch people. And that was my life for, gosh, 10, 20 years. And I just had my family and my kids and, you know, you're a Kiwi. And then something changes.
When did you arrive in New Zealand, Diana?
Oh, long, long, long time ago, in the 80s.
Oh, it was 80s, okay.
But yeah. I went back for a few years, and then I came back in the 90s, so,
yeah. But something changed, you said, sorry.
Something changes, and I just happened to be asked to be the MC at a Dutch festival, and I saw all those people on clogs and doing the clog dancing and hearing the singing, and there was a little cabaret group, and I thought, gosh, this is, I actually really enjoy this. And there was a leaflet about a Dutch museum, and so I got involved in that and rediscovered my Dutch roots and my Dutchness, and so it's been a great journey ever since, you know, to relink back into all that Dutchness that is everywhere in New Zealand. It's quite amazing.
And it's great, isn't it? I mean, having pride in your heritage. I mean, we've come a really long way thinking back about, you know, decades ago when there was a statement made in the House of Representatives, in fact, in New Zealand, that said that every endeavour will be made to disperse new settlers so they will be absorbed into the community and not create little Hollands isolated from the rest of the people in the country.
Yes, and so absolutely.
We've started to look very differently at people coming into the country and assimilating, but actually keeping a very strong sense of identity of their own cultural norms. But do you feel that is the right thing to do?
I do. I absolutely do. And the two are not mutually exclusive. I can be a Kiwi and at the same time have my strong Dutch identity. And you can't get rid of it anyway. You know, I've got a little bit of an accent. I've still got that stubborn streak. I can't help myself. You know, there's a slogan on the wall in our museum. The Kiwis are too polite to be honest, and the Dutch are too honest to be polite. So every now and then we say things that people find a bit hard to swallow, but it's just our honesty, our directness. So it's good to have all these identities. And what we've shown here in Foxton is that we can all work together. The Maori have their identity, their culture, their language. We have now a place where we have our language on the walls and our identity. And there's the pioneering story, and we work with council. And it's if you collaborate, you can create an award-winning facility. We won the Project Excellence Awards from Museums Aotearoa. It's a beautiful space. It's an absolutely beautiful space that we've created together.
And
it works.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess coming back to that whole, you know, how you decided that this is what you're going to do, and you worked for more than a decade very hard at it, and you got there. That sort of entrepreneurial streak, that is very much what the Dutch immigrants have been about from day one. I did see something that you wrote a few years ago on the entrepreneurs from day one, the Dutch and New Zealand entrepreneurs from day one. And you talk about, you know, that's what a lot of the immigrants have done when they started arriving here.
Yep, they did not speak the language, they did not understand the systems, there probably was a bit of barriers put up. A lot of them started their own business.
Yeah.
And I've figured it out. People either self-employed or entrepreneurial in the early days. It was about 30% of all the Dutch who did that. And since it was mostly the men who went out working and women often stayed at home, you know, those were huge numbers. So they all set up their own little businesses, and some of those have grown into huge businesses like Op Zeeland, the transport company in the South Island, Lockwood Homes. Most people don't realize that's a Dutch company.
Yeah.
It's run by the third generation, Lagrow now. There's Verkerks, the salami people, there's John Jones Steel, which is a huge building company in the South Island. So again, these Dutchies went ahead and did it, and some of them were very successful, and not all of them, but most were successful.
The farmers, of course, all the
farmers from Terra, I think, is about 15% Dutch farmers, 20%, 15, 20%. We don't know exactly.
Yeah.
So it's everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, and look, and they've sure made a really good name for Dutch people coming into the country, because when I arrived 30 years ago in 89, a little bit after you, I think, you know, there was no hesitation of people taking you on because of the strong work ethics that they knew that Dutch people quite often, you know, brought with them. So, so good for the Dutch immigrants. Lucky us. I think the person that set up Ons Dorp also was someone who had a vision like you. What you wanted to achieve, and look at that. No, that's still going strong.
And as a result of I can't think of his name right now. Normally I can remember, but I'm getting old, obviously. But as a result of what he did, there was Netherville Retirement Village that was set up in Hamilton, and there's the Tasman Retirement Village in Morrinsville. So, we were entrepreneurial, and we take care of ourselves, and like we talked about identity and different identities. No, it's good. It's good for a country, I think. Yeah, you know, yeah. we each bring our own things to the table that are very valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when it comes to your ties to the Dutch community, obviously, you know, you're marketing manager now at the Nieuwestroom, at the Ahau Nieuwestroom. What other ties do you have? I see you sometimes getting together with the Dutch ambassador at events, and I've seen you at the opening of the Abel Tasman 375 exhibition. Is that something you continuously you still do?
Yeah, and it's a highlight. It's what I said before. You know, you relink back into your old culture. There's a bunch of Dutchies. You got that sense of humour that you easily understand each other. And I think it's a celebration of who we are and where we come from. So yeah, Koningsdag of course is big. Sinterklaas is another one, and we have Sinterklaas. That's Saint Nicholas Santa.
Yeah.
For the Kiwis out there, and it's early December, and we celebrate that all over the country with little kiddies getting very, very excited.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's those are nice occasions to catch up with people, be Dutch, eat Dutch food. That's always an important one as well.
What's your favorite?
Well, there's the bitterballen and the corn stuff, of course.
Yeah, I love
and
those.
The croquette, and because I'm down here in Foxton now, I can have Patat Special once a week.
Yeah.
I allow myself.
Tell our listeners what it is, because they will be disgusted. What is Patat Special?
It's thick cut fries, and then you have mayonnaise, real mayonnaise, Dutch mayonnaise, and either curry sauce or tomato sauce, and raw onion on top of that. And then here in the Dutch Oven Cafe, they have another one that also has bacon and satay sauce. And cheese. So, so we like our chips with lots of taste, in other words.
And patatje oorlog? Is that peanut sauce and mayonnaise, I think?
And raw onion again, and sambal.
Oh, I can see
chili sauce, chili sauce.
I bet you there's some people turning their nose up right now listening to this, thinking, how do they eat it? But we have other really good stuff. My boy loves kaas soufflés, and I can't get them anywhere in New Zealand. So if anyone hears this, call out for kaas soufflés, let me know where it is. Look, I'm talking to Ian van der Boon. It has been a real pleasure again. The 15 minutes that we had just flown past. But look, I just want to say, you know, you're a very inspiring person, what you've done, setting up this this museum to make that, you know, Dutch connection, let people know where, you know, our history, but also where, you know, we connect as cultures. You know, obviously that was recognized with your knighthood, Dutch knighthood, and you know, you're doing an amazing job. I hope to come back to Foxton sometime soon and have another look around the museum. That'd be lovely.
Thank you. Looking forward to seeing you here. And you just reminded me of something. Because we submerged into mainstream New Zealand, we became the invisible immigrants. People kind of forgot about us, and even Michael King in his Penguin History of New Zealand, he didn't mention the Dutch immigrants, and he did mention everybody else, but we're no longer invisible.
No, we're here to stay.
We're here, and
we can
prove it.
All
thank
right,
you.
Thanks,
okay,
Ian.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Get together next week at 9:05 a.m. or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.